Thank you. Is this on? Okay, great. Yeah, so thanks for having me. And I'm coming, my advisor, Leonid, sends his regrets. He wanted to come, but he was already traveling this week. And so if you don't like anything to present, just blame him, since he told me to do it. No. But I'll be talking about deleterious passenger mutations in cancer. Okay. So I think with all the talks before, people are probably already a little familiar with the idea of driver mutations. These are the handful of mutations in the cell, or a dozen or so, that actually bring about the cancer phenotype. They increase the rate of division, avoid apoptosis, induce angiogenesis, and they're generally what most geneticists are interested in when they're looking at cancer mutations. But along with these driver mutations, there's a huge background of passenger mutations. They're non-recurrent mutations, meaning you don't see them at the same place in two different cancers. And they're really spread out really all across the genome. So they're generally believed to be neutral. But what I'm going to do is talk to you today about why we believe they're deleterious and how that affects the dynamics of cancer. Okay, and so again, just to bring home the point, the reason why, again, if drivers cause cancer, the reason why we're studying passengers is because they might be able to slow down the evolution of cancer. They might be able to, I'll show later, and we believe they might be able to constrain the paths that cancer can take, that pre-neoplastic cells can take to cancer. Their fitness effects affects how we interpret sequencing data, and they may be the target of cancer therapies. And I believe even Jasmine Fu talked earlier today, yesterday, about how passengers could even become drivers as well. So, and again, just one last reason why we're studying passengers is just the sheer numbers. I mean, in carcinomas, there's almost about 2 orders of magnitude greater difference between the number of driver mutations and the number of passenger mutations. So even if their effect is very mild, they're still going to have a very large aggregate effect, even relative to drivers, because of their quantity. Okay, so the first thing I'm going to try to convince you today is that passenger mutations can still accumulate despite selective pressures against them in cancer. So the test is, the first thing we did was develop a stochastic evolutionary model of cancer progression. And in our model, we have individual cells that can go through one of four events. They can divide, they can die, and they can divide with while producing a driver mutation in one of the progeny, or they can divide while producing a passenger mutation on the progeny. And the sort of dynamics, this is sort of just to give you an idea of what the cancer dynamics we expect to look like over time. But there's a lot of random division and death, and passengers slowly accrue along the way. And then when a driver comes, it takes over the population in a codon expansion. And yes. So this is actually what we're trying to illustrate here. So the total number of passengers, because it's the number of drivers in the cell is only a small subset of genes, is rather small. We assume it to be on the order of about 700 loci in the human genome for any given cancer. And that's even maybe a high estimate. Whereas the number of passengers, we believe, and I'll present you a little evidence later more as to why we believe this, but we believe really almost any mutation, or the vast majority of mutations in protein-coding genes, can be deleterious. Because there's already been a fair amount of previous evidence that in the germline, most mutations are deleterious, not because they abrogate function in the active site, but because they can cause proteins to misfold slightly more often, perturb the protein away from its optimal state, and that can be slightly deleterious. So this is really trying to illustrate that. There's a very large number of ways you can create slightly deleterious mutations, but their effect is very small, whereas there's only a few drivers, and their effect is large. So this is just to give you a ballpark estimate of the parameters we're using. So, and we parameterize all four of these events with a birth rate as a function of the drivers and the passengers, a death rate, which is a function of the carrying capacity of the initial lesion, although this will change over time as the cell acquires genetic mutations, and the mutation rate into drivers times the fitness effect of the driver, which is SD, and the mutation rate to create a passenger mu p times the fitness effect of a passenger. Say that again? Oh, and n is the total number of cells. Yeah. So these are sort of the ballpark estimates of these rates. This mutation rate assumes that the cancers already acquire a mutated phenotype early on, although we explored a range. And sort of the number of loci as well as mutation rate are interdependent. The rate at which drivers is the mutation rate times the drivers. So we explored all three of these over several orders of magnitude, but not independently, because that would be redundant in many ways. And then we investigated the fitness effects of drivers and passengers and tried very different carrying capacities of the initial lesion. So when we run the simulations, the first thing we noticed is we got two really different behaviors. Some trajectory, these four trajectories all have the exact same parameters and initial conditions, and in spite of that, they end up with markedly different behaviors. Some of them stochastically drift towards larger populations, and once they commit down this path, they grow rapidly, and you can see that some of them will slowly decline, and this decline is generally due to the accumulation of passengers, which we then explored across sort of a phase space, and you can see the passengers accumulate really across a large range of parameters across four orders of magnitude mutation rate and for various fitness effects of these passengers. and their effects, their accumulations was similar to the kind of the numbers we observe genetically, and we sort of found sort of three regimes. There were effectively neutral passengers where the fitness effects of these passengers were very small and they didn't really do anything. We had slightly deleterious passengers which, because of their deleteriousness, could slow or revert progression to cancer and increase the amount of passengers that would accumulate. And then very deleterious passengers did not evade natural selection, as you might expect. And by very deleterious, I want to really underline that these are still very small numbers compared to what you would measure sort of biochemically. This is 10%. We really stop seeing passengers accumulate even once you go to like 3 or 4%. But this still, because of the large target size, has a major effect on cancer progression. And if we compare our parameters to what sort of is observed if you just randomly mutate YFP in yeast, again, with the resulting effect that the YFP misfolds and clogs protein folding pathways and proteolytic pathways, you reduce the fitness in a range similar to where we're seeing these deleterious effects of passengers. Okay, so that was a promising result, but we wanted to actually see if we could find evidence for this in the genomic data that's out there. So what we did was we relied on a metric that was developed by the lab of Shamil Sunyev, and they developed an algorithm called PolyFen to estimate to determine whether the classified mutation is deleterious to a cell or non-deleterious based on its occurrence in related species. And the way this basic metric works is you run a blast alignment of the gene that harbors the mutation of interest and compare it to related homologs and paralogs. And then you compare your mutation to the alignment. And if your mutation occurs at a loci which isn't well conserved in the alignment, you would expect this to be neutral. If there was a negative effect, then it would be avoided by natural selection. Whereas if the mutation occurred in a region where the protein sequence was well conserved, you would expect it to be deleterious. And so this does a very good job of delineating deleterious mutations that we already know are deleterious in the databanks of deleterious genes, along with frequently occurring SNPs in the population that were confident or neutral. And then we can compare passengers and drivers to these two populations, and we see drivers, which kind of surprised us, produced a very strongly deleterious phenotype. And there's sort of two interpretations of this. One is drivers are deleterious because they're changing the function of the protein, and the function, and they can only do that if they occur in the active site or the well-conserved loci, or you can also interpret it as there's very strong, or there's strong selection against mutations that can cause cancer in the germline, and this is why they're well-conserved. Surprisingly, passengers produced a phenotype that was almost identical to mutations that we generated randomly using a three-point model. They were only slightly significantly less deleterious than the random mutations, and far more deleterious than neutral mutations. So this really gave us confidence that not only can deleterious mutations accumulate in our models, but we're seeing evidence for this in sequence cancers. Okay. So hopefully I've convinced you of our first sort of goal, that passenger mutations can be deleterious to the cancer cells and still accumulate the slight selective pressures against us. So what we want to really do now is sort of say, okay, well, what are the implications of this for cancer progression, and are there ways, since this is cancer, are there ways we can exploit this for treatment? So looking at the model, the first thing, you know, we said is, and a lot of this is probably already, things you're probably already thinking now looking at it, we looked at really a very specific model. We only looked at populations in a certain size. We didn't really consider any spatial microenvironmental considerations. There's a lot of talk about how important stem cells are and asymmetric cell division. There's a lot of limitations of the model, and so you can sort of take this in two paths. You can say, okay, let's try to relax the assumptions, develop a very specific model that captures the way cancer evolves most generally, or you can say, well, I don't even really know how important stem cells are, and I would rather develop a model that can really sort of, an understanding that is really generalizable since we're scientists. So we tried to say, rather than refine the model, say, are there some general principles we can take out of this? So if you look closer at these trajectories, the first thing you can notice is there's sort of this step-like behavior. And if you zoom in on it, you can see rather clearly that the jumps are due to the clonal expansion of a driver. These drivers confer a strong and advantageous phenotype to the cell, and there's good evidence for that in the literature that they provide these very strong advantageous phenotypes. And so they take over the population in a clonal expansion that occurs rather quickly over the lifetime of the tumor in these almost step-like jumps. Whereas in between these drivers, because they're so rare, there's this gradual accumulation of passengers that occurs here. But on top of this, there are also, when drivers do expand, you have these sort of hitchhiking events. In fact, passengers to some people are called hitchhiking mutations, because when the driver expands, any mutations that happen to be on that genome on that clone with the new driver mutation will hitchhike along with it to fixation. So we see a little evidence for that here. And we looked a little, and you can see evidence a little more clearly if you look at the actual haplotypes in the population over time. So this is sort of the textbook idea of how cancer is evolving. You have these different haplotypes that start to take over the population and that get outcompeted by other haplotypes or just disappear out of drift. And what we see in our model is actually something a lot more noisy, but somewhat similar. So the color of each one of these blotches in my graph represents the population size of a certain haplotype. And the haplotype is defined by the number of passengers here. And you can see the total population size sort of goes along this sort of step-like fashion. It undergoes these clonal expansions to the drivers and this general superimposed on this noise from the from stochastic noise from random division and death. And the passengers slowly increase in quantity. But at the same time, you see these sort of stark jumps. Right when the next clonal expansion occurs, it really goes straight from blue to green, and then the next one goes from green to yellow, while at the same time, there's this general gradual accumulation of passengers in between. If we zoom in a little closer here, you can start to really see what's happening to the heterogeneity in the cancer. So what I'm showing here is the zoom in, and before the clonal expansion, you can see that there's a lot of different haplotypes, 1, 2, 3, and they vary over a large number of colors because there's a large diversity of passenger mutations in the population. Right when the clonal expansion occurs, all this heterogeneity really dies out, and you can see the population is all green for a moment. And then over time, as new mutations arise in the population, new passenger haplotypes bleed into the population. So that sort of was explaining sort of qualitatively what was going on, and we then tried to get a little more quantitative about how passengers accumulate. So the first thing we had is, okay, so there's this tug of war between drivers and passengers, but why is it that the simulations with identical parameters still end up going down two fates? And so we tried to understand this by saying, okay, if we coarse grain this and sort of just look at overall what's happening, there's an increase in the population size due to the accumulation of drivers, and a decrease in the population size of velocity downwards due to the accumulation of passengers. We can estimate using population genetics how often drivers will come into the population. So that would be the frequency with which they occur, which is just the mutation rate of drivers times the number of cells that could acquire a driver, times the probability that once the driver does occur in the population, it fixates. And to first approximation, this is just SD. The larger the fitness of a driver, the more likely it's to fixate because of the greater advantage it provides to the cell. And then the change in population size is just the number of cells that acquire this driver after it fixates N times the increase in the birth rate SD. So this all comes together to get that value. And then we can estimate the population decline due to passengers. Again, the number of passengers is going to be the frequency with which passengers come into the population times the probability that they fixate, which in this case will be just 1 over n. If we assume that they're effectively neutral, the chances that a mutation takes over the population is basically 1 over n, because just because it's sort of like a lottery. This one, if you have neutral mutations and you're going to assume that one half of light tubs take over the population, then the chances of it being any particular haplotype is just proportional to the frequency of that haplotype, which is after one mutation just 1 over n. And then the effect of these passengers. So if we combine this together, what we find is that the velocity of drivers is quadratic in n, while the velocity of passengers is linear in n. And so this, what it really does is illuminate why we're seeing these two different fates. The drivers, as you increase in population size, increase in a quadratically in the rate that they accumulate, whereas the passengers only increase linearly. And so this forms basically a palabra, and it can be sort of thought of as a sort of activation barrier. There's a critical population size n star, where underneath this population size, trajectories will drift towards extinction, and above this, trajectories will drift towards growth. Now, of course, this is a stochastic model, and so as you approach the n star, you will end up on either side of a certain probability. So we can estimate that probability if we define the system sort of according to this step-like fashion. There's this velocity down due to passengers, there's a frequency of driver accumulation that's stochastic, and then there's an increase in the population size due to the drivers. So this forms a general stochastic equation, which I'm not a real expert at solving, but one of the people who collaborated with Kirill Korolev is, and he really showed that you can solve this analytically, and it gives you this blue result, and for the initial parameters we chose, it corresponds very closely to simulations. So again, we assume passengers fixate at an effectively neutral rate. We assume drivers fixate according to what's called the Moran process, which is, as I told you earlier, it's approximately proportional to SD times the frequency with which drivers come into the population, N times mu D. And then there is the probability And then there's the effect of a driver fixating the population, which is kind of steep. So the vertical, sorry, this is small. Vertical axis is the probability that you get cancer given a certain population size. So you can see there's this, and I should have labeled this here in the diagram, this N star is right here, this point where there's a 50-50 chance that you progress, this point right here, where there's a 50-50% chance that you undergo either fate, and then because this accumulation is stochastic, it only declines probabilistically above and below the curve at the top. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so that was just for our initial set of parameters, but when we started to explore the parameter space, we found that the agreement varied. So first of all, you can see one of the interesting things we found is that the probability of cancer depended heavily on the mutation rate. As the mutation rate increases, the likelihood of cancer declined. And that's a little counterintuitive, especially because people think of the mutated phenotype as causing cancer. The reason why you're seeing this here is because we assumed we wanted to really just see what's the chances of cancer given infinite time, and that's not really realistic. If you were to simulate it for the lifetime of a human, you would have sort of optimum in the mutation rate, where intermediate mutation rates are most advantageous to cancer, and higher mutation rates are less. So when we compare our theory to the simulations, we see it fit kind of well in this sort of regime, which I showed you earlier, but then it really didn't capture the high mutation rate effect. So our first thought was, well, okay, maybe that's because assuming passengers were neutral was a bad approximation. Instead, what we can do is sort of come up with a lower limit for the fixation rate of passengers. And that would be the probably the passenger fixates in isolation, without drivers, without any other passengers. And again, this follows the Moran model, which I believe was talked about earlier. I don't know if I thinking about this now, I didn't really have much time spent explaining the Moran process, but I believe there's an earlier talk that sort of touched on this to people. Okay. So if we use this Moran result, we get a lower limit for the population size, and that explains part of the variation, but it doesn't really capture much. And even then, this is still an approximation. In reality, the probability of passenger fixation is even more complicated. So what you actually have is, what we can actually do is analytically derive the frequency of each passenger haplotype in the absence of drivers over time. So this would be the population size of each haplotype. So this would be the birth rate of the haplotype, which is the number of cells times the initial birth rate divided by the number of passengers. So as you accumulate more passengers, your birth rate declines, and this is sort of captured here. We wanted, again, in the model, this is something I didn't introduce just yet. It has this functional form where it's b over 1 plus sp to the p, because we wanted to sort of, we assumed that passengers were multiplicative. That is, if you acquire two passenger mutations, their fitness effect is the first one times the second one. So that's why it has this functional form. And then we had the death rate, which was linear in K. And then we have these passenger mutations, which have a very low rate of back mutations. So you can only go from a haplotype with fewer passenger mutations to one with more passenger mutations. So this is sort of, so what this does is these two forces. So n sub index p is the number of cells with p passengers in the absence of drivers. N is the total number of cells. So there's two sort of forces here. There's the selection forces, which select for fitter classes of cells with fewer passenger mutations. And there's the fact that the mutation rates have a very low back mutation rate, and so they tend to push the population to the left. And collectively, they conspire to create this sort of Poisson distribution at steady state, with the mean proportional to the mutation rate of passengers divided by the selection against passengers, so sort of a balance between these two forces. And of course, this is also ignoring the fact that there's noise in the stochastic division and death of these cells. So what that does is it will cause these haplotypes to sort of drift up and down, and this cis haplotype every once in a while will drift towards zero. And once it does, it creates a new cis haplotype, and the distribution reforms around this new maximum haplotype. So this sort of slow incremental change in the distribution is called Mueller's ratchet, and it's been well understood for a period of time. And solving this equation in the case where t doesn't go to infinity is a little bit complicated. For very large periods of time, we can assume the independent mutation rate that I showed you earlier, and for very high mutation rates, we can assume it's neutral. But in between, we had to sort of borrow solutions where we model this as a traveling wave, and one where we really model this as a ratcheting mechanism. But I'm not really going to go into that. But other than to say that we can really capture, in the absence of drivers, the effect of passenger servers quite effectively by bootstrapping these three approximate methods together. So all that captured this sort of behavior between cancer on the right here and no cancer on the left here, but it still failed to capture the dynamics for large mutation rate. And we were able to explain this effect by going back to this distribution that we know is Poisson in nature, and said, okay, well, we know the mean fitness of the population is mu p, because this distribution has a mean of mu p over sp, and the fitness effect of each passenger is sp. Now, if a driver mutation is fitter than mu p, then it can occur in basically anywhere in this distribution and still become the fittest haplotype after it arises. Say it occurred in this cell, the fitness of the cell will then go up to here if this was the fitness effect of a driver, if this is the fitness effect of a driver. But if mu p is greater than sd, then what happens is when you acquire mutation rate, is there's you're not guaranteed to become the fittest cell in the population. And so you're not necessarily going to take over the population of clonal expansion if you don't become the fittest haplotype. So when the population is, when the mutation rate of passengers increases beyond the fitness effect of drivers, we see that cancer really starts to drop off again because these drivers are having difficulty fixating in the population. And we were able to model this collectively because, again, this was a result studied previously. And our third iteration of the model captures sort of the dynamics of the whole phase space. And we did this across all the parameters. And again, there's still some issues with this solution is non-analytic in some regions. But for the most part, we captured sort of all the dynamics of the system. So I already showed you that passengers slow down the evolution of cancer. They reduce the fitness of the population by accumulating, and their distribution can reduce the probability that the driver fixates in the population. I've showed you that they constrain cancer. There's regions where the mutation rate and the selection against passengers and the population size do not permit cancer, in regions where they do. I perhaps convinced you that passengers affect the way we interpret sequencing data. I showed you that they carry non-neutral phenotypes, and one of the things we're trying to test right now is, well, do they, since they're non-neutral, what's their, and a lot of previous models assumed that the passengers' accumulated neutral rate, can a neutral model capture the distribution of passengers and drivers in the population? And
you have a passenger mutation in a
So that's a good point. Again, and this is sort of, that's definitely possible to have happen. You can have one mutation that's individually neutral, and then they combine to create an advantageous phenotype. But yeah, and that's something that this we didn't have any driver mutations that became drivers after one neutral mutation and then a second mutation. That's something that'd be nice to include in the model, but from our initial study of the genomic evidence, a lot of the mutations aren't. I don't know how prevalent that is. For example, we see passenger mutations in genes for olfactory receptors, and it's very hard to believe that a mutation in that gene is going to have anything to do with cancer. There seems to be a lot of passenger mutations occurring sort of sporadically across the genome, and while certainly a subset of these are relevant to cancer, we're going to sort of expect that if they do increase the probability of cancer, that you're going to see them more often than you'd expect by chance in your cancer sequences. And we see that there's a lot of mutations across the genome that don't occur more than you'd expect by chance. So obviously some of that's a limitation of how much sequencing you do. If your sequencing is kind of not very deep, or if you don't sequence many cancers, you could see something that was a small driver that just looked like a passenger. The evidence really suggests that across the whole genome there is. Sure. No. We're not. Again, I totally agree that can happen, but sort of the frequency of this, we don't really think it's a dominant factor in passenger mutations. We're assuming that really a third of the genome or more can acquire. We see mutations in over a third of the genes in the human genome, actually in about 75% of genes in the human genome. So it's hard to believe that is really accounting for the larger fraction of passenger mutations. Okay, so our model for the initial data that we looked at can sort of explain the frequency with which driver mutations occur in the population relative to the total mutations, or the ratio of drivers to passengers across different cancers. So we find from our theory that if you're going to have fewer mutations, an amount of them have to be drivers, and when you have more mutations, a much larger fraction is passengers. And this seems to agree very well with the genomic evidence that tries to estimate the number of drivers and passengers in the population. Although this is still a very small data set, and we'd like to try it on larger data sets that we now have. And then this was actually on the first day, there was a fun something I really liked that Bob Gatenby said. We need to trick these cells into developing evolution strategies which we can then exploit. Well, passengers is a great example of this. Cancers have an elevated mutation rate that they use to acquire drivers at a faster rate, and then we can sort of turn that against, and then we're sort of curious, can we turn that against the cancer and use it and exacerbate the effects of the deleterious mutations that they acquire in addition to the drivers along the way. So we simulated cancers growing up to a million cells, and then said, okay, if we increase the fitness effect of passengers or mutation rate against drivers, can we kill these populations? And the answer was yes, or occasionally. When we increase mutation rate, it's kind of a dangerous thing because you can create a more aggressive more aggressive strain, but it may also kill the population, and likewise for increasing the effect of passengers. And you might say, oh, increasing the effect of passengers, it's easy to do in your model, but how can you do that in reality? Well, we've started to notice that there's a lot of evidence building that we can exacerbate the deleterious effects of passengers through increasing their proteotoxicity. So it's well known, I sort of mentioned this at the beginning, that a large fraction of mutations that aren't noticed as deleterious to biochemists, because these are very small effects, but deleterious in the germline, are deleterious because they cause partial misfolding of proteins and clog protein folding pathways, and there's good evidence that chaperone proteins are very important in cancer, that they're overexpressed, indicative of poor prognosis, and if you knock down the master regulator of chaperone proteins, you can prevent tumorigenesis in mice. And there's even been recently, not too old, or some cases even more further back, evidence that if you have a very large rate of DNA damage and chromosome instability, you can actually have better outcomes clinically. So I think that's the talk.